Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Doug Tribou. Technology can change fast. Think about the phones, cars, and computers you've owned in your lifetime. And lately, it seems like almost every day there's a new advancement, some big, some small, that has the potential to radically change the way we interact with the world and do our work.
But one thing that hasn't changed much in the past three decades? Wages. So what's going on? How can technology make us a more productive workforce and often increase profits, but pay remains stagnant?
Boston University Law School professor James Besson says the problem lies in how people learn the new skills they need to use a new technology. Besson is also an economist and a former software company CEO, and he says the key is to help create policies that will shorten the gap between invention and widespread technical training in the workforce. That's the subject of James Besson's latest book, Learning by Doing: The Real Connection Between Innovation, Wages, and Wealth. And he joins us now in the studio. James, thanks for coming in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'd like to start with your own personal experience. You developed the first WYSIWYG desktop publishing program in 1983. And for people not familiar with that, if you use WordPress or other platforms to work your website, that's the creation. Can you talk about the learning curve and how that played out?
Right. So we thought we'd write this neat software. We used it for a small newspaper that I owned at the time. We thought we'd package it up and sell it, and it started selling. And then the phone started ringing off the hook with support calls. People had no idea what to do with it. And they were using it for all sorts of things that we had no idea what the purposes were. So it wasn't particularly well adapted. So we had to do a lot of learning. They had to do a lot of learning. And it was a huge investment, and it took time and it took effort.
And it's still sort of ongoing, right? I mean, there are still people learning how to use the newer versions of the tool.
Right. So you look, since in the 70s, basically you had type was being prepared by typographers and compositors. They worked, a lot of it still even then was on hot metal machines, the Linotype machine. The desktop publishing and computerized publishing came along and replaced that. And the job shifted from the typographers to graphic designers. But then the web came along and it shifted to web designers. And then smartphones came along and it shifted to mobile designers. And constantly standards are changing. The technology is changing. 3 years ago, every designer needed to know Flash. Today, Flash is nearly obsolete and everybody needs to know HTML5. There's a constant learning curve. And some people can keep up with it and they're earning good pay. But the average designer is having a much harder time with it.
And why is that? I mean, there's no question these things are making us more efficient and more productive, but the wages are stagnant. What's going on there?
Right. So I think there are a number of things affecting wages, and I should be clear that it's not just technology. But the book focuses on why technology isn't working like it used to. So, over the past 200 years, technology is responsible for something like a 10 times increase in the wage of the average person, average worker. What you have when you think about those graphic designers, the average designer today doesn't have the latest skills and it doesn't have an easy way to get them. The things are changing too fast for the schools to teach them. So the graphic design schools aren't necessarily up to date, and somebody who went to school 10 or 15 years ago certainly doesn't have the skills unless they can teach themselves or have gone back to school. It's continual change. Some people do very well, and so we see a separation in occupation after occupation where you have people at the top who are doing well and they have seen their wages go up and they are benefiting from technology, but the average in many cases, the average worker is not. And that's a major contributor to why we have stagnant wages for the last couple decades.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Have you ever been shut out of a job because you couldn't keep up with technological changes? Or do you worry about staying on top of the flurry of new apps and gadgets, innovations? Or maybe are you a business owner and you've been struggling to decide what technology to use in your business and how to keep your employees trained? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can share your comments on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So I want to turn back to your book. I think it's fascinating that you start at the mills in Lowell in the 1840s. And the person that you start off with is Lucy Larcom. She was a published poet. She had attracted national attention. Her work made it into collections that were edited by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. But she wasn't a full-time poet. She worked in the mills. I'd like to have you describe how the mills treated Lucy Larcom and her coworkers.
So they needed to attract bright, intelligent people to work in this entirely new environment with strange, noisy machines. So when they set up, Lowell was basically set up from scratch, from green fields. It was a farming hamlet, but it had good water power supply. So they built the town, but they built all sorts of educational institutions. They built boarding houses so the girls could stay there. And what they did was they recruited young farm girls from all over New England. They would come. They had all sorts of religious opportunities. They had all sorts of lectures, musical opportunities, cultural opportunities. Lucy compared it in her memoirs later in life. She compared it to young women's colleges. It was very much that sort of experience. It's not what we associate with the dark satanic mills. That, and things, of course, eventually change. But in order to get the technology off the ground, it really made a difference to have educated workers, at least at that level of education, who are bright and intelligent and could sort of learn these new things in this new environment and this new way of working. And many of them didn't, but the ones, by attracting a good supply of very talented people, they were able to make Lowell a success.
Well, in the book, you draw the parallel to Google, which is famous for having all these extra things that make it a more attractive place to work for its employees. The balance is how much of it is things that will keep them there because they want those things, and how much of it actually benefits the workplace, if you know what I'm saying. The, learning about poetry or educating yourself, did that really help them run the mill any better?
I think it's hard to tell. What we do know is that literate weavers in these early decades were actually more productive. That 10 or 15% more productive. They could output that much more cloth. And at the time, that could often make a key difference between whether the mill was very profitable or perhaps even unprofitable.
So when we're looking back, you see some parallels in the Industrial Revolution where wages were also stagnant there. Do you have an idea about what the corollary is to now?
It's a very different situation, of course, but the reason wages were stagnant then, and this went on for decades. So the weavers' wages were flat basically until the Civil War, and then after the Civil War, by the end of the century, they close to tripled. So you had this very rapid wage growth after the Civil War, and what made a difference was establishing the training institutions and establishing the labor markets. That in the early years, they could recruit people, but the people left. They weren't there very long. There wasn't an urban residential workforce that they could rehire from. So most of the people they hired were raw recruits, and they had to be trained each time. And there wasn't a competition for, if I was a skilled weaver at one mill, there weren't other mills out there bidding for my services so that I could bargain and get a pay increase, or my employer might want to pay me more just to keep me. Once that sort of labor market developed, then wages shut up. And we see similar things today. So talk about the graphic designers again. You've got some people who learn and learn through their experience. The very talented ones may develop a reputation, but you don't have certifications. You don't have – the skills aren't standardized. If I go and hire a graphic designer, they may have 15 years experience, but it may be the wrong experience. So I don't know what I'm getting as an employer, so I'm not going to necessarily pay very much.
Right. Well, so when we look at the current situation, how do you see the best model? There's the idea that government could set some policy that improves education. There's also these companies that could just invest themselves. And then you maybe in the middle, you have community colleges. Is there one that stands out to you as the best approach?
Well, no, I think basically you need everything. You need policies in a bunch of different areas. So you need to develop training where training is feasible. A lot of these skills change so fast that it's hard to set up vocational training of any sort. But it's a good idea to have one thing that's very encouraging. You're seeing a lot of employers and community colleges working together so that work-study programs where people learn in the classroom and they also learn on the shop floor, and that's good. You see a lot of industries setting up certification and standardizing technology. There are a lot of obstacles, a lot of reasons why firms don't necessarily want to standardize technology, and the government can sometimes play a positive role there. Another thing is employee mobility. One of the key things in having a labor market work well is that if I have skills, I can go and work at another employer. Increasingly we're seeing declines in worker mobility in the U.S. over the last 10 or 20 years. Things like employee non-compete agreements, for instance, inhibit the development of labor markets and new skills. And I think this is something that's holding back not only the technology but also workers' wages. So there's a whole range of different things that I think need to kick in. And it's a tough struggle because technology is changing very rapidly, thanks to the advances in computers and information technology.
You're listening to Radio Boston. Our guest is James Bessin. His new book is Learning by Doing, The Real Connection Between Innovation, Wages, and Wealth. We want to hear from you, listeners, about your experiences with technology and training. Our phone number is 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Jesse is calling from Watertown. Jesse, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hey, guys. How's everybody doing?
Great. Good. Thank you.
So my comment is, I may be just parroting what you guys are already saying, but at the end of the 90s, I was finishing college, and the bottom dropped out of the dot-com industry, and the job that I had planned for myself at Intel was replaced with software. So I went back out into the field and started working as an IT consultant. I helped small businesses figure out where to spend their technology dollars and how to implement it. And it's that ability to kind of learn as I go, because I didn't school myself to be an IT consultant. I just, as I go, learn what I need to know and add to my skill set. And it's been a lot more valuable to me than my degree was.
James, I want to turn it to you. What's your reaction to Jesse's point?
Yeah,
there?
Well, it's a common situation. People think that a college degree is the answer, and it's really only the entry ticket. I think a college degree can still be very important, and it may set you on the road to learning on the job and learning is learning by doing. A good college education will help you learn. You will learn better on your own. But just having the diploma doesn't necessarily mean you have that ability, but I think in general it probably helps. But you're absolutely right. It's only the first step that you need to think about lifelong learning.
In terms of training and internships and all these things, will companies come to the point where they want to invest more in training, or are they hoping that the community college model will do it for them?
Well, it's hard to say. In terms of formal training where they pay somebody, the numbers have actually gone down in the last decade or two. So firms are spending less in that way. That's not necessarily, I would say from the start, that's maybe only a small part of the total training that goes on, particularly about new technologies. I would hope that firms step up. You know, this is a big problem for employers as well. So you have regularly employers complaining about the difficulty hiring skilled workers. I think the last, you see a number of surveys, 35-40% typically of employers report that they have difficulty finding people with the right skills. They are so often reluctant to invest in an employee because maybe that employee is going to leave. And employees are sometimes reluctant to invest in an employer's technology because they don't know whether it's going to be useful in a job somewhere else. So it's a chicken and egg situation a little bit. I think ultimately, if we solve it, we're going to see both greater investments by workers and greater investments by firms.
You talk a lot about these situations where employees are sort of in that middle, like in healthcare. You've written about where they're not the the highly educated doctor, and they're also not the lowest on the totem pole. What would you say to those employees in the middle who are chasing technology and they're also concerned about their long-term future? You know, what is there I know that's a broad question, but is there a best approach?
Yeah, so healthcare is actually an example where things are working well. So it turns out that there have been about 2 million jobs created in healthcare for mid-skill workers. In other words, if you look at the ratio of mid-skill workers like nurses compared to doctors, what they were 20 years ago, we have and you look at the number of doctors today, we have 2 million more of those mid-skill workers. And they're in all sorts of technical specialties now. And some of them are new as new technology comes along. What we've developed in healthcare is a set of business models where people are able to get valuable experience on the job and it increases their wages and the training system is working. So we've seen both rising employment and rising wages for all of those middle skill jobs.
That's James Bessin, the author of Learning by Doing. James, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Doug Tribou with Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is Radio Boston.